thank you very much, Craig. That's a very topical issue, of course, because as it stops warming, people are going to look for other scares, and this is one of them. You know, it's funny, a lot of media and a lot of others tend to treat the news that they're getting, you know, this is not a problem, or not likely to be a problem, we don't know 100% any of these signs, that this is bad news. Well, actually, it's really good news. I mean, if you have children, you don't want the world to go to hell in a handbasket due to ecological collapse. So I don't personally understand why people consider these informations to be bad news. Anyway, our next speaker is Dr. Craig Lowell. He obtained his PhD in natural resource management in 1982 from Colorado State University with a specialization in mathematical ecology. Isn't that a nice change? There's so many ecologists that probably don't have much in the way of numerology and mathematics. He has published 5 books, 140 peer-reviewed papers, and numerous technical reports. Of these, 28 are on the topics of paleoclimate, the hockey stick, climate sensitivity, and climate impacts. And I should just mention, there is one paper he's written, which I used actually in my class at Carleton, where even art students, people in journalism, law, things like that, who were not specialized in science, they all understood it fine. And it's a very simple, beautiful paper to read. And I'll just read the title. It's called A Mathematical Analysis of the Divergence Problem in Dendrochronology. Okay, this was talking about how the response of tree rings to rising temperature is not a linear function. It's not just going up constantly. There in many species is actually a peak. Okay, so at times when you see certain tree ring widths, you don't know really which side of the peak you're on. And a lot of the students, it really piqued their interest. Students who otherwise had no background in science were reading that paper and understanding it well. Dr. Lowell worked at the Department of Energy Laboratories before joining the National Council for Air and Stream Improvement in 1998, where he now works. His current research focuses on climate change, landscape ecology, and wildlife-habitat relations. So, Dr. Lowell.
So in doing the research and several papers that I based this talk on, I read hundreds of papers on this topic, and I must say that I'm really very alarmed. I'm extremely alarmed at the sloppiness of the research that I had to read through, as you'll see. So I'm covering areas of crop, forest, and ecosystem health in a warmer world. What will be the response of these systems, starting with crops. Greenhouse and face studies show enhanced growth with CO2 rise, that plants are more drought tolerant, more ability to utilize nitrogen. Some of these things were mentioned earlier today. We have differences between C3 and C4 photosynthetic response. C4, for example, corn, is already has a high temperature max and is less responsive to rising CO2. But C3 plants, the temperature maximum rises with CO2, and so they're able to continue growing at higher temperatures. There's a concern in the media, and you'll see this in the UN reports, worries about future crop failures. There's a most recent National Academy of Sciences report, and they claim to find an alarming trend, and this is one of those sloppy things that you don't expect from the NAS. They projected downward crop yields, but they use false reasoning. In their data, the data points with high temperature were really drought days, that it was a lack of moisture that caused the warmth rather than warmth causing the lack of growth. Plants are not slowing in their growth because of high temperature per se. So what is the likely future of agriculture, notwithstanding the occasional hand-wringing about it? Rising precipitation is forecast by climate models, and this is good for crops. Of course, this wouldn't be true anywhere, everywhere. This is on a global basis, and certainly with any change in climate, whether natural or man-caused, there will be local differences in rainfall. And the rising CO2 is extremely good for crops. Farmers can furthermore adjust their planting dates to shift. Even if the summers got too hot, they could shift to spring and fall plantings, winter plantings, as they do in many places in the world. Furthermore, the least warm is expected in the warmest regions, such as Africa. Anyway, most of the warming is supposed to be in the northern hemisphere. There are also projected ecosystem impacts, and we saw earlier the claim from Hansen that 50,000 species were going to go extinct, that invasive species will be a problem, and you see how this works, that the good species will go extinct, but the bad species will invade, and global warming will help their invasion. I'm not sure quite how that works. Furthermore, that there would be disrupted ecosystem services like fishing, timber, watersheds, and agriculture. And if you're not with the current fad, these are not natural resources. These are ecosystem services. That's the new term for them. They're services. We don't recognize them as having economic value. They're just services. And furthermore, that there would be the loss of whole ecosystems. What are the trends so far? So we have 150 years of warming since the Little Ice Age. The IPCC and IUFRO, in their reports, say that no impacts are detectable on forest ecosystems or forestry as a economic resource so far. No species has been documented to have gone extinct from climate change so far. There is a general greening of the globe. Experiments indicate that more greening is likely, as do computer models, and I'll talk more about that in a minute. So where does the alarm come from? And this is where the sloppiness comes in. It comes from model simplifications, extreme scenarios, leaving CO2 out of your simulated world, fallacies of geographic range shifts, fallacies of the biodiversity crisis, and fallacies of trend. So some examples of model simplifications. Uniform habitat is often modeled because that's easier to do, but habitat is heterogeneous, hilly, wet, dry. There's seasonal variations. When heterogeneity is added into the model, species can persist. For example, in a study of Europe as a whole, when the Europe was modeled as simplified, 90% of the species went extinct in 100 years. But never mind whether that's realistic or not, just under that scenario. If they included the spatial heterogeneity that exists on the real landscape by using a finer scale map, all the species persisted. So making a simple world for your simulation makes your job easier, but it's unrealistic. And the characteristic of this type of study is that when you're dealing with biological systems, anytime you make a mistake of oversimplifying, you're going to get a result that's alarming because you are not including the factors that biological organisms actually respond to. In some of these studies, extreme scenarios are used. For example, warming with no increase in precipitation. Extreme warming, like 8 degrees C. Unrealistic regional general circulation model outputs are used. And when you do this, likewise, the results are not realistic. Leaving CO2 out. CO2, when you raise it, it reduces water use, increases growth, increases drought stress tolerance. These mechanisms can be modeled. Models without CO2 in them, in other words, just keeping CO2 constant, these show impacts by the year 2100. But when you add CO2 into plant growth simulation models or ecosystem simulation models, they almost always show greener world to neutral effects by the year 2100, even under the A2 scenario of the IPCC. So again, leaving out an important factor gives you the wrong answer. And this is just simple laziness. Taking shortcuts is easy in these types of studies because you're being very politically correct at documenting how bad global warming is, and no one is going to criticize you Furthermore, it will take 100 years to be proven wrong. And even when you're proven wrong, like Paul Ehrlich with his population bomb or John Holdren, nobody seems to hold it against them. So it's an ideal business to get into. I just missed the boat, I don't know. There are fallacies of trend. For example, they will project, and with a quite straight face, 1 kilometer per year of boreal forest advance into the tundra. But this is much faster than trees can grow. You can get that for a few years right at the edge of the forest because there's already seeds and seedlings there. It can't continue. And so the invasion of one ecosystem type like the tundra by forest is greatly exaggerated in their models compared to what's physically possible. It is observed that there are some changes in phenology, but this indicates adaptation. It's not something alarming. We had, for example, here in Chicago this year, spring came 5 weeks early. 5 weeks early, and the robins showed up, the geese showed up, the doves showed up, the trees leafed out. I didn't see a problem. That's 5 weeks early. That's like the most outrageous climate change scenario projection that you could get. It's observed that there's shifting geographic ranges. But again, rather than being alarming, this is an indication of adaptation, that animals and plants are able to adapt to a change in the climate. And there's this thing of projecting invasive species spread that only bad species are helped by climate change. There's the fallacy of biogeography. And what's done here in literally a ton of papers, a pile of papers. I started collecting them, and the pile was starting to threatening to fall off my desk. I had so many papers on this topic. And it's very easy to do. Really, if you need to get a couple of publications, this is a very easy thing. You map the current zone of a species. You take a climate model. You project the future zone of the species, as we have here, the current range, the future range, according to a climate model. And you say, oh my God, look at that. They don't overlap. And the species can't move that fast, especially if you're looking at plants. Although I've seen people make statements like this about bats, as if they were unable to move a couple of hundred miles. I don't know why people would think that. But taking plants, well, they clearly can't move that fast, so they're going to be extinct. And this is where a lot of those figures that you see about thousands of species going extinct, this is where that comes from. However, species are not that sensitive to climate change. The thermal maximum for trees in the boreal forest and the thermal maximum for rainforest trees, that is, the temperature that will kill them, is the same. It's about 47 degrees centigrade. What determines the current range of, let's say, tree species that I know the most about is not that the northern species can't grow in the south, it's that they can't grow fast enough in the south to compete with the species that are there. And so if you get a warming, you will get species gradually competing and moving farther to the north. So this is a gradual change. What does the paleo record say? In past warming episodes, there's data from the Grand Canyon and the boreal forest, northward migrations take thousands of years. When it gets colder, the retreat of the boreal forest is much faster because trees are actually killed by the cold. But warming takes several thousand years for a migration of a vegetation zone. Then we have the extinction crisis fallacy. And this is a work that Willis Eschenbach and I got published recently. It stated that we are in a biodiversity crisis, and of course, climate change will make it worse. This is just assumed. But let's look at the extinction crisis. And this is the paper that we did. We looked at bird and mammal extinctions of the last 150 years, the causes and locations, and 95% of all extinctions were from islands. Furthermore, almost all of those extinctions were due to hunting or are introduced pets and predators and commensals like rats. On islands, the rate was 180 times higher than on continents, on a unit area basis. And if you looked at it relative to background rates, the island extinction rates were very, very high, whereas continental extinction rates for birds and mammals were slightly elevated. Disease was a minor contributor. Habitat loss could not really be documented as a cause in almost any of these. And this is because island fauna are uniquely sensitive. They've lost, true island fauna have lost their ability to respond to predators, and you can just walk right up and pick them up. And therefore, even huge areas of habitat loss cannot be implicated in extinctions. Hunting and predation is the main cause, and the extinction crisis is largely a tropical island phenomenon, and there's no conclusions you can draw with respect to climate change. Even in spite of huge habitat alterations in North America in the past 200 years, agriculture and then reforestation. So, in conclusion, oversimple models give alarming results. Realistic models give positive forecasts for crops, forest growth, ecosystem productivity, the greening of the earth, no indication that there's a catastrophe in progress. Range shifts of biomes will be very slow, thousands of years slow. Forest productivity will increase and crop yield will increase. Thank you.